This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, June 26, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as usual, we are here to help you become an above average investor and rise above the ranks of those that follow the herd and use emotions and simply leads them to bad decisions, right? And about their money, about their investments. And we're here to listen to your concerns, hear your ideas, field your questions about some of the financial topics that are on your mind, and perhaps pass along some new ideas and expand your view on the things that we want to talk about to help you gain some ground in your efforts to ensure financial freedom or a comfortable retirement, whatever you feel your goals are. Because goals can be different and everyone has different views of their goals, and our goal here is to help you achieve them and get you on the right path. Now today we have some words of advice for millennials who might be saying no to stocks out of fear of short-term volatility. Curb fears and grow rich is our main talking point today. Now every investor looks for answers to help make their decisions more clear and more confident, but sometimes, maybe many times, answers don't come easy. This is a complex endeavor, investing. It's filled with pitfalls and opportunity. And it takes some experience and some knowledge for you to decipher between the two. Because one can look very much like the other. For example, what fundamental numbers should an investor look for in picking a solid company to invest in? Now that question, as simple as it seems, is not an easy answer. It's not one thing to look for. And it also depends on what your goals are. There are multiple metrics to look at, fundamental metrics to consider when buying a stock. But for what, how to rank those metrics can differ between industry, between a type of stock, whether it's a growth stock or a value stock, whether they have a lot of debt or they don't. And it can also vary depending on your goals. You could say you want a company that is making money and growing its sales with expanding margins. You can also say you want a company that has some kind of economic advantage, maybe a strong brand name or technology, whatever it is. Now, however, that answer, correct as it is, does not provide you with a solid basis to go look for a stock. Those are generalizations. So what growth rate are you looking for? How much profit? How do you measure that competitive advantage? So here are some basics, but each one of these numbers and their quality depends on the stock and the industry you invest in. So there's return on equity of 17% or higher. It's a good start. However, return on equity can be distorted if they have a lot of debt in their balance sheet, because part of that calculation is the leverage that they have in their balance sheet. So a company can look like it's very profitable, has high return on equity, so it can look attractive in from that perspective. But if their business is cyclical and you have a downturn, suddenly, because of that leverage, profitability not only drops dramatically and quickly, but also they could get in financial trouble because they have a lot of debt in their balance sheet. What happens when lenders stop lending to them? Bondholders stop letting them borrow? Now, is that more or less important in a financial company versus maybe a food staple company like a Procter & Gamble or General Mills? What about an industrial company or a retailer? They all need to be considered in their with their own characteristics in mind. Of not just the company, its brand strength and its business strength, but also the industry as a whole. So that's why we always say you want to compare any metric to its peers, not necessarily to just any company in the marketplace. Now, you might want a growth rate to be twice the P/E ratio. Of course, in the high-tech world, you may see much higher growth rates than normal, than in the boring old line industry growth that you might see from your GEs of the world. Now, in each case, the relationship between growth and P/E can be distorted. For example, growth, it can look good based on year-over-year numbers, but they may be slowing, right? Growth may be slowing. Or it's in the technology world, and guess what? A new technology or new company comes along with something that's better. So there's no easy answers, and likely never will be. But that's our goal here, is to give you some perspective. And we're not here to tell you that we're the end-all, be-all. We have all the answers for you. But we have the perspective of decades of investment knowledge and a value investing approach that hopefully will keep your head level, balancing pros and cons, and making the right analysis. It's not easy, and it never will be. There's no silver bullet. There's no black box software. It's about putting your nose to the grindstone, finding good investments based on all the fundamental and technical factors that line up, and making sure it's right for you based on the risk. And all that takes time and effort. And I'm glad you're with us for this hour, because hopefully we can answer your questions and we can give you some tidbits that will improve your decision making. So let's try to answer your questions right now. Our listener line is open at 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime line. We are live 4 to 5 Pacific time each and every weekday. But let's take this question question that came in between programs.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. First, thank you. I really appreciate and value listening to your podcast. I had a quick question. With the recent acquisition of Whole Foods by Amazon, I was wondering your feelings on a buy at this time for Costco. It's down a little bit right now. I'm just interested in your thoughts. Thank you again. Appreciate the show.
All right, he's looking at Costco. I'm not sure I need to explain what Costco is, but certainly they're the largest wholesale retailer out there. From a technical perspective, it is very, very oversold. It was trading in the 175 range back in early this month, and now it's at 157 at the close on Friday, closed today at 159.85. So a nice little bounce in the stock, and it did hit technical support around this area. And I do think that it is oversold, and there will be a short-term bounce probably into the mid 160s, maybe gets up to 170. I'm not exactly sure how far that goes. But if you're talking about from a fundamental perspective, I don't think it's cheap enough yet. It's certainly much cheaper than it was 3 weeks ago, but I don't think it's cheap yet. So if you're looking for a short-term bounce, yes, I like Costco. If you're looking for something that's deeply discounted, a great deal, I think there's other retailers out there that are better. You know, the dividend yields on this is only about 1.25%. The return on equity is 21, which is very nice, and revenues are growing in the mid-single digits, solid. But if you look at their deeper statistics, like their operating earnings yields, only 5.5%. Still, that's after this large sell-off. Still not cheap enough for me there. Enterprise value to EBITDA is about 13. Not super expensive, but not super cheap either. So I want to see this much higher, Frank. Or see a lot of the valuations much cheaper, let's say. So I would need a bigger sell-off. So like I said, short term, I think there will be a bounce, probably 165, 170 area. But I think you need a deeper pullback on the weekly and monthly chart to be a long-term buy for me. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. You know, the old rule of thumb used to be that you should subtract your age from 100. And that's the percentage of your portfolio that you should keep in stocks. But with Americans living longer and longer, some are recommending that rule should be closer to 120 or maybe even higher. But, you know, it's all about your risk tolerance. So let's talk about that and anything else you want to discuss. 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So you get through and ask your question on this Monday. Now, saying no to stocks could do greater harm to your financial well-being than short-term volatility that accomplishes that accompanies the equities, right? Stocks. And so today we're going to talk about millennials and how you should do this to curb fears and grow rich. So one of our main talking points today, but I have some others as well. What are the next industries that will go the way of taxis and hotels? Think of Uber and Lyft disrupting the taxi world, hotels being disrupted by Airbnb, although I don't think they're going to go away, but I'm certainly the supply and demand for them will go down. But what other industries may be next and more vulnerable to the cloud and disintermediation of services? Say that. So we're going to go into that. Then also, why Wall Street hates giving any stock a sell rating. This smacks of history. I'm a historian of the market. I study not just what happened over the last 10 years or 20 years. I study what happened over the last 100 or 200 years and more. Because human nature doesn't change, and therefore the same pitfalls that befell us hundreds of years ago still wreak havoc on people's decision-making today, because those emotions don't change, fear and greed. So we're going to, this is an interesting article about how really Wall Street just doesn't like to give sell signals on stocks anymore. And then lastly, is Yellen's bid to lift inflation running into a cost-cutting buzzsaw? What are the things that are pushing back on inflation that is keeping inflation low? So this is Invest Talk. I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have plenty of time, but it goes by quick, so get your call in sooner rather than later. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. I'm glad you're investing this hour with us. Let's hear your voice. Our anytime listener line, as always, is 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve or Justin. This is Andres calling from Florida. I have a couple of questions for you. First one is Target. I just picked it up today. Everything looks good on it. The only question I have is on the debt. What are your thoughts on the debt? The other two questions are, I know that you have mentioned that operating earning yields should be above 6. I was wondering how you determine that number, and as well, what does that mean as far as the operating earning yields? And then the last question is in regards to free cash flow in regards to market cap. What is the meaning behind that? What do you get from knowing the free cash flow as opposed to the market cap? Thank you very much. I hope you can answer these questions on the next podcast. Love the show.
All right, what you're looking at a few things. Operating earnings yield has to do with, because there's earnings in a business, right? You these large, especially large corporations, public companies, there's all types of ways that companies earn profits. They're not like your typical small business where you do a handful of things and boom, that's your profit, right? A company like Target, for example, and you're asking about the debt. I don't have a big issue with its debt. It has about $10 billion in debt, market cap about $30 billion. They have a lot of stores and a lot of assets. I have no issues with their debt level at all, especially with how steadily profitable their business has been throughout the years. Now, you're looking at operating earnings yield. Earnings can come from various sources. GE was very notorious for this back in the day, is they used to always beat their earnings by a penny, right? And the way they do that was they would sell off certain assets to lock in gains and profits on a particular asset, and usually it was like a building or something like that, and that would get them to their earnings number. But that's not part of their operations, their core operations. A lot of companies that have ancillary businesses, they might have, say, like a subsidiary that they don't really control, but they have ownership stake in it, and the portion of those profits go to their bottom line, right? Or they sell a building, or they sell an asset, or they license, you know, it's something that's not core to their business. And so when you're looking at operating earnings, that's what's most important. All those other ancillary things, a lot of times they don't have control of it. It's not really their bread and butter. It's not what makes their business. It just tends to be things that throughout the years they've staked claim to in some way, shape, or form. And they get earnings from it. But you don't want to worry too much about that, because those come and go. What matters most is what their operating earnings continue to be on a regular basis. And that's why I like operating earnings yield over just earnings yield, because it's less manipulated, let's say that. And you're looking at cash flow to market cap. You know, that's just another valuation metric, right? Another valuation metric that you look at for a company. And frankly, I like free cash flow. That's another one of those metrics that is hard to manipulate, and it's what goes to the bottom line of a company's balance sheet, or down to pay off debt, or pay out to shareholders, or buy back stock, or whatever it is. Okay, so I like cash flow. I like free cash flow. So that's just the metric that you want to use. The valuation metric is like a P ratio, right? And instead of earnings, you're basically using the cash flow, free cash flow number on their balance sheet. So hope that gives you a little insight on all of those things and clarified it. Let's go to Wendy in Chino Hills.
Hey, Justin, how are you?
Great. What can I do for you?
So today's question is regarding the potential like a crash maybe.
Okay.
So last week somebody called and Steve said, okay, if you are new, don't get into the market yet. Maybe wait for a large correction or something, then get you. So my question is, like, if I buy some of the stock, like Costco, you mentioned earlier, if I bought them maybe around $110, that I think you said was a good value price, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I buy at that point, if there is like a correction for the whole market,
mm-hmm.
how low can it go from that point? Like from the deep value place, how low can it go? From historically.
Well, I mean, you could look at a longer term chart of, like Costco, for example.
Mm-hmm.
How low can it
mm-hmm.
go? I mean, theoretically, it could go to zero. I mean, there's nothing saying that it won't last forever. I mean, if you go back 50 years, most of the stocks that were in the Dow Jones Industrial Average are now gone, right? Either they went bankrupt or they were acquired. A lot of them went bankrupt. So it's not saying, I'm not saying Costco's going bankrupt or anything. So theoretically,
okay.
It could go down infinite. It could go to zero. Right? But you have to understand what is kind of a good longer term value. You know, when we look at, we have charts of different valuation metrics like enterprise value to EBITDA or operating earnings yield or various things. And we look at it throughout history and we try to buy when those things are showing that it's very cheap, so that we know over history it's traded between these numbers and it's at the low end of that range. So it's very cheap right here. You know, that's one of the reasons we like Target down here. And other times we'll sell stocks that have gotten too stretched too far. Right. So theoretically, it could go to zero, but ultimately, you need to have an out that the most loss you can stand. If you bought it at 110, you got to have whatever your out is. Maybe it's 100, maybe that's 90. That should be based on the chart. Thanks for the call, Wendy. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART.
Our InvestTalk podcast continues next, but first, reason number four for getting together with Steve for a portfolio checkup, dividends. Dividends, they can be the hidden value in a stock. And the question is, how can you maximize your return in an ever-changing economic climate? Steve can help you reorganize your retirement portfolio, finding those dividends. And there's never a cost for InvestTalk listeners and no obligation of any kind. To schedule your one-to-one conversation with Steve, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review. And he can meet with you on Skype or telephone from anywhere in the USA. Or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Now let's get back to the podcast. Now let's continue with Invest Talk. Financial advisor Justin Klein is ready to answer your money question right now on any money topic. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
That's how you get through and ask your question. We have about 25 minutes left in the show, and it's going to go by quick, so make your call now. Now, millennials have been colored by their experience from the financial crisis, right? The Great Recession that saw their parents' savings get wiped out. Maybe their parents lost their home or their friend's parents or their grandparents or a cousin or whoever. They probably saw somebody in financial distress during that time. And also, they just simply can look at a chart of the stocks and housing prices and see how far things went down. And this has colored their view of the markets. And a whopping 85% of them label themselves conservative investors. And about half of those say they're very conservative. Now, in contrast, only 29% of baby boomers characterize themselves as very conservative. So you would think, you know, it's the opposite of what you would think, is young people are more aggressive and older people are more conservative. Well, it's not true, because the baby boomers, they built a lot of their wealth on the stock market boom of the 80s and 90s, right, during the secular bull market, where millennials have been experienced the secular bear market from 2000 until, I mean, you could say in 2012, we'll see if they actually hold new highs, but that's technically what they're experiencing. So the question is, how can they curb, if you're somebody who's still weary of the market, how can you curb your investing fears and put your money to work effectively? Well, first is reducing volatility by staying diversified. And it's not just about diversifying within stocks, it's diversifying within U.S. stocks and the international stocks, and then maybe emerging markets, and then also adding some fixed income, corporate and government bonds, right, like treasuries. Then real estate, whether that's through direct ownership or through REITs. Maybe infrastructure stocks. It's not all about the high-flying, exciting tech names. You know, the infrastructure stocks that deal with water and electricity and toll roads and airports, things like that. So diversification is a number one. A lot of people get, especially millennials right now, you know, they're caught up in these cryptocurrencies, which are cratering today, the high-flying tech stocks like the Facebooks and Googles of the world and the Teslas, etc. But those are the most volatile names you can invest in. And then it's about managing your downside risk. Because studies show that retail investors who react to market volatility tend to wait too long to get out, as well as too long to return to the market. So they tend to end up selling low and buying high, which is the exact opposite of what you want to do, but consistently investors do this. And this is one reason why we do the show. It's one reason why we have a business of investing for clients. Because 9 out of 10 of them cannot handle the emotions, and they eventually turn to us because we can handle emotions, because we've been dealing with the emotions for decades. And we know that you have to have a down-to-earth approach. So you want to seek stocks that tend to be more stable. Maybe they're anti-cyclical. Maybe have high sustainable dividends. Not just high dividends, but high and sustainable dividends based on earnings, history, etc. Now, it's crazier to think that the younger investors are so conservative because they have time to ride the ups and downs. But as always, what you're seeing now a little bit is millennials' conservatism cracking. Think of, like I said, the cryptocurrencies. That's just another symptom of the technology bubble 2.0 that we're in now. And a lot of them are starting to get more aggressive. What, when? Right near the end. And why is that? Because of FOMO, fear of missing out. They want those gains. They saw their friends who, you know, the small percentage that got into cryptocurrencies 4 years ago, and now they're making a bunch of money. Well, they're doing what typically happens is they get in too late. It's the greater fool theory. Who's going to be the last fool in? So that's why we preach the numbers, the valuations, business sustainability. Not just stories. And I know stories are exciting. I know stories get your attention. I know stories are what gets viewers on MSNBC or CNBC. But that's not the road to sustained success. Could you buy it now? It goes up 30%, 40%, 100% in the near term, and you've feel like you're the king of the world. But 9 out of 10 of those people are going to hold too long, and because the downside comes quick and ferocious when it does. Just go look at the tech bust of 2000. And 9 out of 10 don't get in time enough to lock in any gains. So it doesn't mean you don't dabble in those names. It doesn't mean you ignore them. But you understand the risks, you have a plan knowing those risks, knowing the volatility, and you don't fall in love with the stock, which is a lot of times what happens. So let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question at 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number.
Hi, Justin, Steve. This is Dave, a podcast listener from Pennsylvania. I had a question about AOBC, American Outdoor Brands Corporation. I have a small position in this. I'd like to basically double it. I know it reports on June 29th, but the valuation looks really good. Margins are nice. Earnings are growing. The fundamentals just look really great. Technically, I know it's taken a little bit of a hit lately, but I think it's getting ready to pop, to be quite honest with you. I like the sector that it's in as well. Wondering if you had any thoughts on this, and especially where you think it'll be in a couple of days on the 29th when it reports earnings. Thanks again. Bye.
Looking at American Outdoor Brands, this is a gun manufacturer. They manufacture firearms, including revolvers, pistols, rifles, and firearm-related products and accessories. This is actually a name that we picked up, March, April time frame, somewhere in there. It's trading at 23.70 today. 23.25 the close today, down 45 cents. I think we picked it up around in the high teens, I want to say, maybe right around $20. Don't quote me on that, but I know it was definitely lower than here. So we like the name. Its valuation is cheap, like you said. You have an operating earnings yield of about 16%. That's very, very high. Enterprise value to EBITDA is only about 5.5. That's very, very cheap. That's near the lows of what it's been over the life of the company. So I like that. It's with trading at the low end of its valuation range, which is a nice positive. Doesn't pay a dividend. Its cash from operations is still on the rise, even though earnings are on the rise as well. Earnings went from 22 cents in 2011 all the way to $2.36 today. Now, earnings are supposed to fall a little bit next year, right? Because the expectations are Trump's not going to be hard on gun owners. He's talked about that. So there's less urgency to go out and buy guns, but the demand for guns still remains pretty strong. So I see no reason to doubt that the earnings will continue. Maybe they'll go down a little bit, but even at these valuation levels, it's still very, very cheap. So I like AOBC. It's definitely going to be a higher risk name because there's no dividend, small cap name, $1.3 billion market cap, but very strong company, high return on investment capital. You're talking about in the mid-20s. Mid-20s in 2013, it was in the mid-30s, almost 40%. So I love it. Very profitable, strong balance sheet, good business, very little debt, solid growth. I'm a fan. Now, what does an InvestTalk insider know that you don't? Maybe something she or he saw on one of the dozens or more webinars or easy read info sheets or watch lists written by myself and Steve and Jason in our office. So why not give yourself the insider advantage? Sign up yourself on investtalk.com. It's free. Just go to the InvestTalk tab.
To get up on breaking financial news and in-depth articles that can help you find your way through today's challenging money marketplace, visit our InvestTalk Insiders Information Carousel. Click on the InvestTalk tab on investtalk.com, then InvestTalk Insider.
Hi, gentlemen. I just had a question, kind of a general financial well-being question. I know that it's kind of customary for people to recommend and have 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses put away in the bank just in case of unforeseen events. I was just wondering, though, if you would consider having that money in bond funds to be just as good as having that money in the bank. Because currently I have about a year's worth of living expenses kind of set aside, so to speak, in one of my brokerage accounts in bond funds, which I think are pretty safe, but was just wondering, I know it should lose value as well, but I was just wondering if you thought that was a sound strategy or if it would be better off to just have a money market or just a savings account paying, let's say, 7 or 8 tenths of 1%, but just have that money there for peace of mind. I look forward to hearing your thoughts or ideas about this on the podcast. And gentlemen, keep up the good work. Thanks.
He's asking about your savings, emergency savings fund that you should have, and how to really put it to work. It's sitting there. It's probably not going to earn a lot in today's, in a savings account or whatever. So how do you get it moving along at a quicker pace? Let's say that, right, is the whole goal. And he's talking about putting it into a bond fund. And certainly you're going to get a higher yield if you do that. But you're also exposing yourself to more risk, and not all bond funds are the same. The question, is it a high-yield bond fund? You might get 4, 5, 6% plus yield on it, but you're exposing yourself to considerable amounts of credit risk, very similar to the stock market. Okay, so you could have big declines in value because of that. So definitely wouldn't do a high yield bond fund. Then you say, okay, what about a intermediate, maybe long-term government bond fund or high-grade bond fund where you're not investing in risky securities? Well, then I say you're subject to duration risk. You know, you're going to get nice, better yield than your money market, your savings account, maybe 3%, 4%. But if interest rates go up 1% and the duration, say, 8 years, you're going to lose 8% like that. So I wouldn't do that. Then you go, okay, we want to be a short-term bond fund, meaning maybe a short-term high-quality bond fund. I would say that's probably the best place to be if you're going to be in a bond fund. But what's that yield? There's still some duration risk, a little bit of volatility. Not a lot, but you're going to get a little bit of volatility there. But to me, why not just go to bankrate.com, find the highest yielding money market account, and put it in that? I think that's the best way to go. You know, it's FDIC insured, and make sure that you're going to get some yield, but you're probably not going to get a ton in this market, you know, 1.25% or so. But you're not going to get that much more from a short-term bond fund. So I would say, no, I'm not a big fan of that. I probably just put it in a money market, not worry about the risk. This is an emergency fund. You know, could you squeeze an extra $20 a month in yield off of it? Maybe. But you're also exposing yourself to probably too much risk for my taste. So I would just stick it in the highest yielding government-insured money market fund that you can find out there. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Give us a call. We have 10 minutes left, so if you're going to call, you got to do it now. Let's take a look at the market today. We had what did the market do today? Dow was up 15 points. S&P was basically flat, up less than a point. NASDAQ was down 18. Once again, the tech sector was down decently. And it seems very shaky right now. You're seeing a lot, and none of those tech names are getting much traction. You're seeing kind of the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency craze kind of come off in a dramatic way. Today, I think Ethereum was down 30% at one point. And a lot of those and a lot of the chip names are tied to the cryptocurrency craze because of cryptocurrency mining and things like that. So it's a very interesting time in the tech world and also a very dangerous time. And you saw that today. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. We'd love to hear from you before the hour is up. We're going into our last segment. So give us a call. 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. Let's go to Steve in Oakland. How you doing, Steve?
Hey, how's it going? Love listening to your guys' show. I had a quick question. What are your thoughts about Philip Morris, PM? Mm-hmm. I've had them for several months, or maybe a year. I'm up about 38%, mm-hmm. and I really like its dividend, but it's also at the peak of its 52-week high in terms of price point. So I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on Philip Morris International?
We're in the same boat as you. We actually bought it around $90 a share, and now it's at $119.44 at the close today. It does pay a nice, juicy 3.5% dividend, which obviously you and I bought it a lot lower, so it's over 4 in that case, based on the price we bought it at. But it's had a big rally, and it's certainly not cheap anymore. So we've been thinking about cutting our stake in it, maybe even eliminating our stake in Philip Morris at these levels. It hasn't really broken down technically, but we're keeping a very close eye on it, and we think it could have one more surge higher, maybe into the 125 area, and we definitely sell it there. So I definitely wouldn't pick up more shares. If you own it, I would cut some of your stake, most likely in the near term. You're right to be a little worried.
That's what I thought. Thanks so much for the advice. That's exactly what I was thinking. Thanks so much.
No problem, Steve. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, thank you, Justin. I was wondering what your thought might be for GDX at this price.
I think it's very close to the end of the long year-long pullback and consolidation that started summer of last year. Right, it peaked in June. You had a big rally from January of 2016 to June of 2016, and it's really had a pretty steep but controlled pullback since then. It's pulled back about half that, which is very typical after such a large run from a low of, what was that low, $12.45 and as high as about $31, $32. So it was a big run, and now we're at $22.50. So we still have a pretty substantial gold miner exposure. We don't own GDX, but some of the components of GDX in one of our strategies, and we think gold will break up to the upside. Probably relatively soon. I don't know when exactly it's going to happen, but I do think it'll be relatively soon. So I do like GDX.
Excellent. Thank you, Justin. I appreciate it.
No problem, Mike. Thanks for the call. It was GDX, VanEck Vector's Gold Miner ETF. Now, there are new industries. There are many industries that are going to be disrupted the same way that taxis and hotels have been, right? With Uber and Airbnb and VRBO and Lyft, etc. And the platform acts really by taking out the middleman, the intermediaries between customers and the services that they want. Now, the big question is, what are the next industries to be disrupted in this manner? And one very well could be healthcare. Think about all the little things like you need stitches, right? Do you really need a doctor to give you stitches? No, nurses stitch up people all the time. You know, you have a fever, you need to diagnose a cold. You probably don't really need a doctor to really tell you that you have a cold, right? So there's little things, non-critical procedures and services on the healthcare side that can be done by either a doctor that's just independent, doesn't need an office, they makes house calls or whatever, and you just order them up on an app. I could easily see that being something that comes about in the next 10 to 20 years. You just have to create a platform that people trust, and then whoever's on that platform, the users will likely trust. Then there's things like elder care, right? Child care, home care, that say you need a babysitter, boom, why not just get on an app and order something? But mainly professional services, I think, are some of the biggest. Think of lawyers, right? Why not just have a service where you can order up a lawyer to write up a document or incorporate you or whatever? So there are a lot of industries that are going to be disrupted in the same way that Lyft is, same way that Uber, or same way that taxis have been disrupted and hotels have been disrupted. So be on the lookout for that to continue because it's not going away. Now, our time is up for the hour. Before we go, reminder, we have set a date for July checkup. Steve will be paying you a visit in San Jose, in the San Jose area, if you're up there on July 18th. You can also meet him via Skype or FaceTime or phone from anywhere. To reserve your hour for individual portfolio reviews, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for being with us. Let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.